Please open up your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. We're going to continue our study in this book as we have been the past few weeks. The Apostle Paul here has entered into some instruction regarding sexual immorality. He is going to address some questions in the next chapter that they have about marriage, but he is laying some groundwork here regarding their attitudes toward immorality. As we discussed last week, this is a very important subject. It was an important subject then. There were people that had wrong thoughts and ideas and behaviors in these areas. And the notions and beliefs about these things have a big impact on people's marriages. Sexual immorality, adultery, idolatry, homosexuality, a lot of these things were things that people practiced in that day as they do today, and they were not acceptable in the sight of God. And certainly, you know, marriage is negatively impacted by the practice of these things. Attitudes about immorality really is a huge problem in marriage and in regard to commitment to marriage. Having a good marriage requires both husband and wife to work together in the fight against immorality. And the Apostle Paul reflects that, recognizes that, and you know that you should be able to tell a Christian that sexual immorality is condemned by God, but he's having to deal with arguments here that the Corinthians are making and justifying their behavior. So we're going to look at that in our lesson this morning. So again, the first part of our text today is found in chapter 6, verses 12 through 15. Short passage that we're going to focus on this morning, really the verses 12 through 17. He starts off by saying, "All things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be dominated by anything. Food is meant for the stomach and the stomach for food, and God will destroy both one and the other. The body is not meant for sexual immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. And God raised the Lord and will also raise us up by His power." So the first argument here, Paul is saying that I'm not going to be mastered by anything. And what I want you to recognize here, and I'm not sure what version of the text that you have, but if you note, there are quotes around a couple of these statements. And so what he is doing here is he's quoting the Corinthians and quoting what would be an argument that people would have made in that day, and a lot of translations rightly put those quotation marks there. The first declaration here is the declaration that all things are lawful. I want you to think about this in regard to Paul answering an argument where people say, "Well, I can do anything that I want. All things are lawful. I can do whatever I want with my body." Nobody's ever heard that argument today, right? That it's my body and I can do with it whatever I want. I have my rights over my body. Anything that I want to do, I can do as I please with my body. Certainly, it's the same types of arguments that you hear today in regard to sexual behavior and abortion in particular. And so these are not new arguments. It's my body. I can do with it what I want. All things are lawful. So Paul is answering that argument. And let's look at his response to that. He's going to use four arguments against this kind of thinking. First of all, he says, just because you think that something is lawful doesn't mean that it's helpful. What is your goal? What is it that you want to do? What is your purpose in life? And if our purpose is to serve God and go to heaven, you know, there's a lot of things that's going to filter out. When we think about it in that way. So we destroy ourselves with this kind of thinking that I am going to exercise my rights, I'm going to exercise my freedom to do whatever it is that I want to do with my body. So just because you think something is lawful doesn't mean that you should do it. And we can understand that this is childish behavior. It's childish thinking. You know, a little child may arrogantly think and foolishly think that I can do whatever I want, so I'm going to run out into the street. I'm free to do that. Yeah, maybe they are free to do that, but that's dangerous. Just because they can do that and because they're free to do it doesn't mean that it's helpful. So Paul's just pointing out, just because you think you have a right to do something does not mean that you should do it, because it's not spiritually helpful to you. Maybe it's not physically helpful to you either. So that's one point that Paul makes. Secondly, Paul responds by saying he's not going to be dominated by anything. I will not be brought under the power of anything. So something may be lawful for you to do, but you don't need to be mastered by that. So Paul, answering this argument, all things are lawful. He said, but I'm not going to be brought under the power of these things that you say are lawful for you to do. I'm not going to be dominated by that. And so there may be things, and we've mentioned this before, there may be things that it's not inherently sinful for you to do, but there are things that are not helpful for you. They are addicting. They may be causing you to be mastered and dominated by them. And so Paul said, I'm not going to be brought under the power of anything. I'm not going to let anything control me. My freedom is not going to be used to enslave myself to the flesh. And certainly with sexual immorality, you know, they are mistaken that they're free to do whatever they want to do. But in regard to sexual immorality, you know, Paul's not going to be enslaved by that, and they don't need to be enslaved by that either. And it doesn't take a Solomon to figure out that sexual immorality is something that is enslaving. There are many types of things that people become involved in that are enslaving and addictive. And Paul says, I'm not going to be mastered by that. And sexual immorality is, once somebody becomes involved in that, it's a difficult habit to break. And you know, let's say that somebody could successfully argue, well, sexual immorality is within my freedom. It's lawful. You know, that's not an argument that you can make, but let's just suppose for a second that somebody could make the argument that I'm free to practice immorality. Even if it was within your freedom, it could become your slave. It could become your master. You know, today, you know, so many people are addicted to pornography. People are addicted to sexual desire. They're addicted to sexual behavior. And so we shouldn't be surprised that God is calling us to remain pure. He wants us to be pure, and He wants those who are unmarried to be pure until they become married. Why? Because the sexual desire is something that's very powerful. And God says that it must be controlled. It can be controlled. And Paul says, you're not to be dominated by anything. So the third response here to this idea that I am free to do whatever I want, all things are lawful, he says that the body is not meant for this. This is not the purpose of the body. The body is not meant for sexual immorality, but to be dedicated to the Lord. And he again quotes something that would have been said in that day, and sometimes said, well, you know, the body is made, food is made for the body, and the body is made for food. What does that mean? Why is he moving from talking about sexual immorality to talking about food and body? Well, people will extrapolate, well, because food is for the body and the body is for food, then sexual immorality is for the body. You know, that's a desire that we have. We have a desire for food, and we fulfill that by taking food into our body. And so there's that relationship between food and the body. The sexual relationship is the same. That, well, we're meant to have this desire and to fulfill this desire. And so we're just doing what comes naturally, just like eating food. We're supposed to fulfill this desire. That's the argument that will be made. Is that an argument that sometimes people make today? Well, you know, quoting my dad, and this is the 60s and 70s, the phrase was, if it feels good, do it. Remember that? And people still quote that today, and that was the philosophy, and many times that's, even though it's not really a trendy catchphrase right now. That's the way people behave. I'm going to do what it is that I want to do, and because I don't have any restraints. God's saying, you need to be restrained in this area. Food's for the body and body for food. No, that's the wrong thinking when it comes to sexual immorality. You can't apply that kind of relationship. Well, you know, sexual immorality is for the body and the body's for sexual immorality. No, that's not correct. The body, yes, you are going to have those desires, but it's not natural and right for you to give in to those desires outside of the marriage relationship. Just because you have a desire does not mean it's the right desire. And just because you have a desire doesn't mean that it's acceptable for you to fulfill that desire in any way that you want to do. Just because you have a desire does not mean that you can fulfill that desire in an unlawful way apart from God's will. Let me illustrate it this way. Suppose when you're driving, you come up to an intersection, you know, maybe it's an exit ramp, and on this exit ramp there's two lanes, and eventually at the top of the ramp these lanes are going to merge into one. And so what happens on a busy day is that the lane on the right kind of gets backed up because everybody eventually is going to merge. And so you've been patiently waiting your turn here. Traffic is going slow. And then somebody comes zipping up the left-hand side and they wait for their opportunity to merge right into there when somebody's playing on their phone or there's a truck and you know that there's going to be an opportunity. I'm not going to wait in the spot. I'm just going to go right around. And so what's my attitude when that happens? I want to run off the road. I know that's true because that's the way people look at me when I do that to them. But you know, is that the right attitude? You might agree that you have that desire to run somebody off the road who's cut you off or done something to you that's causing you difficult or just causing you to be angry. You would agree that that is not a God-approved desire, and you don't have the right, as mad as you are, to take your opportunity to run them off the road. Now, God is in control of your body. The body was meant for the Lord. Your body was not created and given to you by God for you to fulfill your every sexually immoral desire that pops into your mind. We understand that when it comes to just about any other desire or reaction that we might have. That if we gave in to everything that we thought or said everything that popped into our mind, we'd be in big trouble. And people that can't restrain themselves get into trouble. And we restrain ourselves when it comes to the use of our body. The Lord is Lord of the body. Just because your body has an appetite or desire does not mean that you have the right to fill that desire in any way that you please. Also, let's look at what Paul says in verse 13. He says that the body is for the Lord and the Lord for the body. Verse 13, food is meant for the stomach and the stomach for food, and God will destroy both one and the other. The body is not meant for sexual immorality, but for the Lord and the Lord for the body. A couple of things that we need to learn from this statement. First, God is commanding regarding your body and sexual immorality things for your own good. This is not because God does not want you to be able to give in to fulfill your desire, and God does not want you to experience pleasure. He says the Lord is for you and your body. He is not oppressive against your desires. He is commanding what is in your best interest. It's for your own good. And I realize that when your parents told you this is for your own good, you didn't want to hear it. And when God tells us something is for our own good,
A lot of times people don't want to hear that either. And another thing to consider is that some mistakenly think that sexual desire is something that is inherently evil. And it's not. Sexual desires don't come from a source of evil. God made the body. God made that desire. So men and women should not feel bad for having these desires and that something is inherently wrong. The body was not made for immorality. You were made to have those desires, and those desires are to be fulfilled within the bonds of marriage. And when people give in to those desires too early, they create an appetite for sin. And so you may experience a lot more desire than you should have because you've experienced something you shouldn't have experienced yet. But what we need to learn is that we have to fulfill our desires in the way that God instructed. God made your body, and these desires are created, but He is for you. Paul goes on in verses 15 through 17 and talks about some of the problems of sexual immorality. Verse 15, "Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them members of a prostitute? Never. Or do you not know that he who is joined to a prostitute becomes one body with her? For it is written, the two will become one flesh. But he who is joined to the Lord becomes one spirit with him." And so here is a problem with sexual immorality. And this is Paul's fourth argument against sexual immorality. He says, your bodies are members of Christ. You go back to what we said at the beginning. People say, well, I'm free to do whatever I want. My body's mine. Paul said, no, your body's not yours. Your body is Christ. You are joined to Christ as a disciple. Your body belongs to Him. Therefore, any kind of sexual immorality you may be considering is something you shouldn't be thinking about. So how can you take your body, which has been given to the Lord, and join that body to a prostitute? How can you give over your body to sexual immorality when you were washed, when you were made holy, when you were sanctified and justified, as we talked about last week? You were set apart for service to the Lord. You know, it appears, you know, the way that Paul is arguing this here, that the Corinthians didn't really consider this to be much of a big deal. You know, what's the big deal? Who cares if we're sexually immoral? Who cares if we're joined to a prostitute? And Paul's saying this is serious. You hear people today make the statement, well, it's just sex. Paul's saying it's not just that. This is serious. You are joining together with that person. You are becoming one spirit with them, but you're not supposed to be one with them. You're supposed to be one with Christ. Sex is not just a fleshly act, and anybody who says that that's all it is doesn't have the truth of God in them. Verse 16 points out that this act is reserved for marriage because there is to be a joining of your life to that person. So joining to another in sexual immorality means you're not really joined to Christ like you should be, and you're participating in something that's not designed for you until you are married. Those joined to Christ are not going to be joined together with a prostitute or a harlot in sexual immorality. So, you know, sometimes people read this and argue that, well, if you have relations with a person, that means that this is saying that you're automatically married. And that's not what Paul is saying. And that's never been true in the Scriptures. Nowhere in the Scriptures does it teach that if you've committed adultery or committed fornication, that you're automatically married to somebody, or that you're no longer married to your spouse and you become married to the person to whom you're committing adultery with. That's not what Paul is saying. The point is that you are joined to Christ and your body belongs to Him. His other point is that sex is just not sex. It is emotional. It is the joining of body and spirit to another person. Therefore, sexually immoral people are no longer joined to the Lord. You're either joined to another person in sexual immorality, or you are joined to the Lord in purity. Are you going to be pure? Are you going to live a life of purity? And so Paul is describing the spiritual problem that exists with sexual immorality. And so, what Paul is saying is, here's some reasons that we flee sexual immorality. And we'll say more about that in the next lesson as we look at the rest of the chapter. He says, you flee sexual immorality because it's not helpful. You may think you're free to behave any way that you want, but you're not. It's not helpful. One reason it's not helpful is because it will enslave you. And I don't have to point to a lot of statistics for you to know that that's true. We could certainly see that in the world today. What happens to people that give in to sexual immorality? They may live a life of purity for a while, but when they become involved in things that they shouldn't be, whatever kind of addictive behavior it is, whether it be drugs or it be sexual related, their life changes, their priorities change, and it can destroy your life. They become under the power of that. Also, I'm not going to let anything master me, and this is something that can get out of control in a hurry. He's also saying that your body is for serving the Lord, not the flesh. If you're so busy and tied up thinking about every desire that you have, you're not going to be concentrating on what it is that you need to concentrate on. Your body is for serving the Lord and not for serving the flesh. And you are not joined to Christ when you are joined to another in sexual immorality. And so these are things that Paul is addressing with the Corinthians. Many people are in danger of wrecking their lives by allowing sexual immorality to creep into their lives. It's obviously a problem now. It's obviously a problem here for the Corinthians. And Paul is addressing it very seriously, and he continues to do that throughout the next chapter as he talks about the marriage relationship. And it certainly is interesting that you see that sexual immorality is the only God-given reason for a marriage to be broken up. This is the God-given reason that God will, that Jesus taught in Matthew, that a marriage can end in divorce for sexual immorality. Doesn't that tell you how serious this is? That it can wreck a marriage. Pornography is something that destroys marriages because people are living in a fantasy world and not reality. Instead of having the kind of relationship that they should with their spouse. Sexual immorality destroys so many marriages. There have been many studies that have been conducted that show that those that live together without that commitment in marriage and have sexual relations before marriage, the odds of marital problems and divorce are dramatically increased. The Journal of Marriage and Family says the divorce rates of those who cohabitate before marriage have a divorce rate that's 50% higher than those that do not. You know, the statistics really don't matter. The statistics did not serve me to prove my point here. All I've got to do is point to what God said. It doesn't matter what society says. If society said, well, the statistics show that people that live together in sin are more apt not to have a divorce. Oh, well, that makes it okay. So there's a danger in quoting statistics, isn't there? So
The point is that God set the boundaries. God set the rules. In this case, it really does show that God is right when you look at some of the statistics, because there are those that just don't hold that relationship in the esteem that it should be. That they obviously didn't have a problem living together in sin and not, committing themselves to each other. And so it becomes very easy for them to be uncommitted to each other, because that's just been their history. That's been their method throughout the relationship. It's a big problem. But we need to listen to the wisdom of God. Otherwise, we put that relationship in jeopardy. Paul's saying that these are not innocent, insignificant sins. These are sins that destroy relationships, they destroy marriages, they destroy homes, and they destroy your soul. When you are enslaved to something that you're unable to control, and your heart is captured by lust and sin, and you no longer control your flesh, it's a very dangerous way to live. And there are many people who have destroyed their lives. Some people have become involved in these types of things and they have recovered spiritually. But more often than not, they don't recover spiritually. And even if they do, they have destroyed relationships that are very hard to repair. The point we need to take away here from 1 Corinthians chapter 6 is that you're not joined to the Lord when you're involved in sexual immorality, and you're hurting yourself. And the next verse that we'll concentrate on next week tells us to flee sexual immorality. We've got a good example of that in our class that we've been talking about. The difference, as Rex talked about this morning, the difference in Joseph and Judah in the way that they behave sexually. Joseph fled sexual immorality. Judah did not. He went out seeking it. So let's be like Joseph in this regard. Let's take the advice of Paul, who's trying to tell the Corinthians what it is that they need to do, and it's for their own good. God knows what He's talking about, and even if we can't figure that out, God still knows what He's talking about, and we need to live in the way that He has laid out for us in our relationships, and apply these things that may be difficult for many. But it's the truth of God's Word, and it will help us to be in the right relationship with each other and the right relationship with Him, so that we can be with Him in eternity. These things will be useful to you and encouragement to you if we can help anyone in regard to their relationship with Christ, either by being buried in baptism, or if you started that and haven't been faithful and need to make correction, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.